The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Let me tell you what, who deserves a shot in the United States heavyweight.
Let's hear it.
I'm the champion. I ought to know. You know, I've been sizing up guys since I came to the WCW. And I think the one guy that stands out the most, the guy that I think has earned a title shot, El Dandy, I think you're a heck of a wrestler. You're a great technician in the ring, and you're a jam-up guy. Whoa. I don't see any reason.
Wait a minute. El Dandy has been wrestling in the cruiserweight division here. Please.
He's a great wrestler.
He's a great wrestler, but thank goodness sakes, he's 50 pounds.
Who are you to doubt El Dandy? Because this guy's a serious professional.
Well, let's talk about some serious
professionals. How about hypnosis? Let's get to
psychosis.
Whatever. He's a great wrestler, you know.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural edition of the Rawcast. I'm Sammy Colunga, and with me is Mr. Don De Laurentiis.
Hey, good evening, folks. I'm in the co-host role this evening. Glad to join Sam for this inaugural edition of the Rawcast.
All right. So what is this I'm hearing about? So you covered Raw going live on the last show you did, right?
Yes, we did.
All right, so anything else really been going on? The whole Ronda thing, which is coming up more and more like a work.
Yeah, probably. WWE has been officially named an essential business in the state of Florida.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing.
So they can keep on doing their thing. Actually, with the language that they used in this
provision, it's pretty much to where anyone can do it.
Anybody can do it as long as you have the
If UFC chooses, they can get off Fantasy Island and go do that.
That gives AEW ability to go back to Jacksonville
because it's the whole state of Florida, right?
They have been in Georgia for the past couple of weeks, so it gives a little bit more flexibility for those people to those home branches to do that.
You all gotta walk around with a little piece of paper.
Imagine if they didn't have this performance center in Florida and everything was old school like it used to be and it ran out of Stanford. They would really be shut down. Because Connecticut is not playing that shit.
Oh, no, no. No. Yeah, well, you know. Who knows? But let's see. Because I was thinking of like where else they could have run, and they could have just used if the PC wasn't a thing. They could have just used any old building. But then again, like I do believe Vince McMahon was instrumental in getting this thing passed. So there's that.
You think?
I mean, there's that. I mean, he could have done that in his home state. Who knows?
I don't know. They got a good relationship with Florida.
Money greases that wheel, you know?
Oh, yeah, man. You know that.
Can you imagine Vince doing that Vince strut into the city hall?
It might be a little bit less of a strut these days, but yeah, his chest definitely would be out.
All right, so we are going to talk about this latest episode of Monday Night Raw, live from. Where do you think they were coming from?
The Performance Center.
The Performance Center. All righty, so April 13th, Monday Night Raw, Drew McIntyre comes. Now, there are some parts that I missed because, like, at one point I did fall asleep.
I got you.
So I think there might have been like a thing that happened that I didn't catch. I think there was like the tag match with Mr. O'Shea.
The best part of the night. Okay, yeah, I got you.
Here, later I was off doing something else. I don't remember. Let's see. So Drew McIntyre comes down and he cut a boring 20-minute promo. He thanks the audience at home. It is surreal that he beat Brock Lesnar and that he's the WWE champion. He shows a clip of last week's match against Big Show. He talks more, and then Andrade comes down with Zelina Vega. Why do they still do their poses when they're in the crowd? It just looks completely silly.
Hey, man, when you're trained the way they're trained to pose and mug for the cameras, it's hard to not do it.
It's just kind of weird. It's just
it
like,
is.
It's odd, but whatever. The two men make a match, talk some smack. Andrade should not. Zelina Vega should just speak for him from now on because he should never speak
don't
again.
Don't say that. Don't say that. ESL, man. ESL.
Hey, I had to deal with those kids in school. They were not nice.
And you know, the only way that he's going to get better at it is if he does it. So he's got to have a little trial and error period. They let Nakamura do his thing last week with Braun.
All right, so our opening match is the Money in the Bank qualifier, Asuka versus Ruby Riott. Did you know Asuka had a YouTube channel?
No. Does she cook and dance?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay, then I need to get on that then.
Yeah, it's actually really funny. But it's so weird and claustrophobic, because the way it's been, not even lately, the way it's always been, if you watch that thing, it's like she's the only person in the world. But there was one where she went to Barnes & Noble. YouTube
channels, and that would probably be a good idea.
There's like no other people around. Even when she went to the store, there was really no one around. It was just like it's you and her, just going through, like, she was looking at the manga, the Japanese comics in the comic section, and it was just so odd. It was just like you're the only two people in the world, and she's showing you all her favorite mangas. And then, lately it's just been her cooking in her house or ordering from Uber Eats. She takes you through a whole thing where she orders from Uber Eats.
Her and Dee Dee would be fast friends. Dee Dee's been getting a lot of things delivered.
I don't even trust that anymore. Because I've heard some stories. And that's another thing that freaks me out. Like, I just keep hearing more and more things, you know? But anyway, so Ruby offers a hand to Asuka. Asuka laughs, runs at her. Ruby counters. Asuka teases her while Ruby tries to take her down. Ruby shoves Asuka, asking for the real Asuka. Asuka takes her and puts Ruby into an armbar. After this, Asuka becomes more aggressive with Ruby, whipping her into the corner and taking liberties, including a hip attack to the outside and a knee strike on the apron. Asuka dances on the barricade as we go to commercial. After commercial, Ruby gets the upper hand, but Asuka makes a comeback, hits the Asuka lock, but Ruby counters. Ruby hits the flatliner, but to no avail. The two tussle for a bit. Asuka hits the Asuka lock, and Ruby has no choice but to tap. Asuka is interviewed after the match. She says she's going to win the Money in the Bank. What did you think of this match? I actually liked it.
Oh, it was really good, man. When Ruby Riott got kicked in the face... when she did the Snake Eyes and then kicked her in the face, the match picked up. Ruby got to get a little bit more aggressive. She hit that Rings of Saturn, which is always a good look. Shout out to Perry Saturn. Counter into the Asuka lock. We got a dub for the Asuka. And then, you know, no one's ready for Asuka. That's what she said in her interview. It's a good deal. Guess what? It's not quite a squash match, but it's a match and interview. You'll see a theme.
Yeah, it does kind of happen. But no, like, I think, like, now that they don't have to do smoke and mirrors with the crowd anymore, they could just have, like, pure wrestling matches, which is cool. Which you kind of see later with Oni and Aleister.
Mm-hmm.
They actually do get into a little groundwork. MVP is in the VIP lounge. He says there will be 3 Money in the Bank qualifying matches next week. Aleister Black versus Austin Theory, Rey Mysterio versus Murphy, and, of course, himself against Apollo Crews.
He said this next gentleman is one of the greatest ladder match performers in the history of WWE. Me.
He explains what Money in the Bank is because we don't know what that is.
Hopefully this leads to the first member of whatever the faction is I proposed.
Oh, like Cruz. Well, I think I'm pretty sure Apollo's going to whoop him.
Yeah, it's got to be Cruz, Lashley, Cedric, and Rick O'Shea.
Someone said maybe like trying to get like No Way Jose in there, because that'd be like a change of things for him.
I don't know. No Way Jose, he's one of these. He could go either way. He could join Zelina and them, or he could come over here.
Oh, okay. It was Zelina and them. That's what he was talking about. Okay, never mind. Wrong faction. wrong brown faction.
Yeah, this hasn't really become a brown faction yet. We're hoping for it, though.
And he will face Apollo Crews because he is... Go ahead, do it.
What is he? Ballin!
Oni Lorcan versus Aleister Black. Yeah, an Oni Lorcan sighting on Raw.
Yeah, but he had on red tights, though. This ain't winning. I don't know what they did, but this normal black gear was in the cleaners or something. You know, red tights and white boots. That's not Oni Lorcan. He's all black. I guess because Aleister is wearing all black, he had to change it up. Right.
He's like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
All right. So the two men start by locking up. They actually wrestle for a bit before pulling apart and locking up again. Alistair hip tosses Oni. The two put on some offense, and Alistair ends up tossing Oni on the floor. The two men continue to fight. Alistair tries to lock in a triangle armbar, but doesn't quite get it all. Lorcan keeps trying for a half and half suplex, but can't quite connect. Alistair hits the black mass, and the match is over. I thought this was pretty good. A good, good bit of wrestling here.
Oh, man. Anytime Oni Lorcan shows up, somebody's going to get a good ass match. It's going to be stiff. It's going to be hard hitting. You're going to see a little British style. You're going to see some little MMA mixed in. You're going to see some good technical wrestling. He's a good performer, man. He's just, you know, bland. But as far as, like, you know, if it wasn't all about personality and charisma, yeah, Oni Lorcan would be one of the best guys in the business.
I was just picturing Dini giggling at you saying stiff. All right, so Alistair is interviewed. He's asked his game plan for the next match. His game plan is to win. And, of course, you have Mo Reese on Twitter talking about his game plan is to get with Selena Vega.
I think he already got with Selena Vega.
I'm talking about later on.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so Becky Lynch comes down. She addresses Shayna. She's babbling. I have no idea what she's saying. Something about the Joker gets close to the Queen and other stuff. I don't know. It sounded like, to me, like she was quoting that Juice Newton song, that Queen of Hearts. Let's see. Charlie interviews Andrade and Zelina. Zelina cuts a fire promo and Andrade ruins it. So on Twitter, I mentioned that, like, this is like when Tupac would start rapping and then, like, the Outlaws would take over and then I just turn off the radio.
Oh, God.
Like, you have no idea how many of his fire songs they ruin. Like, Hail Mary, they had no business being on that track. All right, so Sarah Logan versus Shayna Baszler. Is it just me, or does Sarah Logan just start look more and more plain every time I see her?
I think they're trying to distance everybody from the Riot Squad thing, because Liv has that new look, Ruby has her same look, and now Sarah Logan's getting like a more plain Jane look.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird, but... All right, Sarah Logan versus Shayna Baszler, Money in the Bank qualifying match. Shayna starts out by just hammering Logan. The refs pull her off, and Baszler steps on her. The referee stops the match. Shayna leaves the ring and heads to the back as she's... And apparently what we thought, well, because the announcer says she was disqualified. So I was like, okay, so she was disqualified for my favorite reason. But no, apparently the announcer got it wrong and Shayna actually won. So was it just because she couldn't continue anymore?
Well, she did the thing where she had her arm and she had it laying out on the mat and then she stomped on her elbow. So yeah, in theory... Sarah Logan's elbow and arm broken or dislocated, and you can't wrestle that way.
Yeah, speaking of theory, we have Austin Theory versus Akira Tozawa next.
Hold on. This is crucial to the night. There's this close-up of Seth Rollins in the back. He makes a couple of
comments. Oh, no, yeah. On losing. I was going to mention these like all together, but yeah.
Okay. To losing to Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, and he says his career... has been crucified.
Uh-huh.
Leaning in.
Where did my notes go? Okay, so the match is pretty tough. The two men really go at it. At some point, you all mentions the ramen noodle moonsault.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's when people were pretty much done with Jerry Lawler. They had actually been like, oh, no, Jerry Lawler, that's cool. But then this week he was back, and yeah, people were definitely not fond of him after that statement.
Oh, no, stay tuned, because we have more later. We have more later on the night. More Jerry Lawlerisms. Unfortunately for Akira, Austin hits the finish, the ATL, and then the rest of Zelina's table come in and beat him up some more while Zelina stands on the announce table and watches. Okay, so here's where I missed up. The next thing I got was the Angel Garza versus local competitor. So okay. I even wrote here, I missed some stuff.
Okay, here we go. So there's this Drew McIntyre documentary on the network. So they hype that up. They show clips from that. Then Charlie interviews Rey Mysterio. He says that he's accomplished so much, but he's never won Money in the Bank. He said Kane cashed it in on him, so he understands just how dangerous it is. He says he has to beat Murphy next week. He puts Murphy over as a tough up-and-coming competitor, but says that he, Rey Rey Mysterio, wants it more. Sad Seth, he cuts another promo. He says he is still here for us. Your Messiah has truly risen. Yeah, that local competitor is Tehuti Miles.
Yeah, no clue who that is, but is he like an NXT guy? Or
Yes. He's a young, up-and-coming NXT
PC guy.
Yes.
Okay, Angel Garza versus local competitor. Angel gets a hold of Mr. Miles and does not let go, hitting him with 5 flying moves and then removing his pants like Tai Chi. He hits a wing clipper, and then that is all she wrote for the local competitor. Zelina's stable appears on the ramp. The three men take out the local competitor. So Kairi and Asuka are interviewed.
Los Ingobernables de WWE?
I don't know. De Florida?
De Orlando?
Yeah.
Or
de Kairi and Asuka.
We could do
Kairi that. Kairi and Asuka. Hey, well, it is only if Andrade comes and like shows complete disregard for that belt. Just throws it around, maybe.
Whoa. Me and Naito had a falling out for that little bit of time where he was that disrespectful to the belt. Luckily, he's only had the two belts for like one appearance because coronavirus broke out. And so I haven't seen him be disrespectful to these two belts.
Yeah, so at last, was he still Naito two belts?
Yes, he's still Naito two belts.
All right. So Kairi and Asuka are going to be about their qualifying match. Asuka says Ruby Riott was not ready for Asuka. Drew McIntyre is interviewed backstage about his match later. He says he does not forgive Andrade for taking 6 months of his career away from him. He is going to claymore him tonight.
He says if he hurts him and he misses 6 months, oh well.
Kairi Sane versus Nia Jax, Money in the Bank qualifier. The match starts and Kairi runs at Nia, but Nia shoves her across the ring. Kairi makes a comeback with some kicks and even taunts Nia. Nia gets hold of Sane and then tosses her out of the ring with one arm. Asuka is backstage cheering her on while watching the monitor the wrong way. Like, they're still doing this, and it's really annoying. She had her back to the monitor and was like craning her neck sideways.
Hey, man, they want to get the whole body on the camera, man.
I see. Do I need to post that example of how to watch TV again? That one with Bret Hart watching Shawn Michaels. No, watching Stone Cold on TV. That was great. That's how you should be doing it. All right, so back in the ring, Nia tosses Kairi around again. She's acting heelish, strutting around the ring. She picks up Kairi and hits the finisher, the Nia later. Which is like a press slam into a Samoan drop.
Very impressive.
So, did I call that right, or was it like, did I just completely get that wrong?
No, that's right. The Annihilator. Okay. There you go, yeah.
No, I'm talking about like what it actually is. Like,
oh, yes. Oh,
so, yeah. Like, she's going to like, she picks her up for a press slam, but instead of, as she drops her, though, she Samoan drops her. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very impressive.
All right. So, Charlotte Flair comes down and talks about the other women in the division, including Io Shirai. All right, so Bobby Lashley versus No Way Jose. Bobby starts out beating down Jose. Lana screaming. Bobby gets out of the ring and tells her to shut the hell up. He gets distracted a second time and Jose tries for a roll up. Bobby gives him a spine buster, spears him, and that is all she wrote for Mr. Jose.
Take your drinks. That was a distraction.
Right. So yeah, so Don mentioned this already, but I wrote down that I forgot to mention the all night we've been getting these little Seth Rollins interludes, saying one-liners and being misunderstood and forsaken. So Viking Raiders versus Cedric Alexander and Mr. Rick O'Shea. So go ahead and mention this match because I missed it completely.
All right, the Viking Raiders versus our new favorite tag team, Ricochet and Cedric Alexander.
Flash! Now driving Alexander into the canvas. Whoa! And the midsection of Cedric Alexander has been lit up in this match by the Raiders.
I don't know how much more Cedric Alexander can stand.
Double knee strike.
Oh, no, not this. Not this.
And now the double team. Into the corner. Alexander could be done for. Oh, and a kick out by Cedric.
You've got to be kidding me.
I can't believe Alexander kicked out.
Why would he want to?
Cedric Alexander is going to have no idea where he is. And now a tag has been made. Ivar's back in legal.
More punishment to be inflicted by the Viking Raiders. Maybe not.
This is amazing.
Alexander able to fight back. Uh-oh. Thought about a neuralizer. Eric able to catch him. From the middle rope. Great offense by the Viking Raiders. Eric and Ivar to secure the victory. Oh, and broken up by Ricochet.
Where did Ricochet come from?
Where did he come from?
Get out of here. Oh, to the back of the neck and a spin kick.
It's getting brutal.
Get out of the ring.
Getting brutal.
Well, that is what the Viking Raiders do.
Get on out. One, two.
Now setting them up. Oh, and jumps.
Get off of them. Come on.
Cover. The Viking Raiders victorious in their return to Raw.
Here are your winners. The Viking Raiders!
I gotta hand it to Ricochet and Cedric Alexander. They put up a heck of a fight.
Boom!
Two guys, too much.
Alexander and Ricochet are gonna really make some waves here in the Raw Tag Team Division, but still, you are going to have to deal with Eric and Ivar, the Viking Raiders.
This was like 13 minutes, fast-paced. Cedric Alexander and Ricochet have a lot of cool tag team moves. They got a lot there. Hopefully they can get into the upper echelon of this tag team picture and not just be the get over guys.
Yeah. All right, so we have our main event.
Whoa.
What happened?
Second best part of the night. Street Profits are backstage.
I missed this too. I heard about it.
Yeah, so the Viking Raiders, after they win the match, they, you know, signal that they won the title shot. So we switch to the Street Profits, and they're in the back, and they comment on the Viking Raiders wanting that tag team shot. And so they acting all silly, doing their normal Street Profits thing. And then we pan over, and Bianca's like, y'all need to straighten this shit up. Stop acting silly. Y'all ain't never beat the Viking Raiders before. They coming for y'all belts. Y'all need to stop fucking around and go get that smoke. So, yeah.
Right, so finally someone talks some sense into him. I've been saying this for months.
So, yeah, it was great.
Alrighty, so we have Drew McIntyre versus Andrade. They said it was title for title, but was Andrade's title really up?
Not really. It's like Big Joker, Little Joker, you know?
I see. Alright, so the match starts with Zelina bad-mouthing Drew. Drew gets the upper hand early, taking him to the outside and chopping him around the ringside area. Garza, in theory, distract Drew, and Andrade gets the upper hand on Drew. Drew makes a comeback, hitting Andrade with a mid-air chop. Andrade goes after Drew, but Drew back body drops him into Garza, in theory, on the outside. He goes up to the top rope where Vega goes to distract him. Andrade takes advantage, tries to give Drew a hammerlock DDT off the turnbuckle, but Drew blocks it, then delivers an Alabama slam on Andrade, and then connects to the Claymore, and that is it for Mr. Andrade. So after the match, Seth music plays. Angel Garza tries to jump Drew, but it is a distraction because Seth runs in and takes out Drew and then gives him a curb stomp as he eyes the WWE Championship laid out in the ring. Seth doesn't say a word. He sets Drew up for a second curb stomp as the show goes off the air. And that is your Monday Night Raw.
How do you feel about Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre as a three-match program?
Now, has he dropped the whole stable gimmick, the disciples? Because that was really silly. Because hopefully this is like opens up like a new darker Seth, which I'm all for.
Well, yeah, he's dressed in the all black. I think Samoa Joe, then World Events, killed the stable.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
because he's like, yeah, I'm out.
No, Samoa Joe got hurt. He got hurt twice. He got hurt, then he failed a drug test, so he was out. He was out. And then they tried to insert the Street Profits in, and that kind of fell flat. And then we had sickness come through and just stuff just went crazy. But yeah, it was shaping up to be really good though when they initially set it up. But yeah, I think Buddy is still like loosely affiliated with it, but AOP, I think one of them got hurt again and they totally off the
Okay. Poor Mr. Murph. All right. So now we're gonna switch it up a little bit.
Hold on.
What's that?
We can't have the raw cast without the Sour Patch rating.
Oh man. Well.
Oh man.
Being is like this is like a weird alternate universe thing. I don't know. There's really no way to just really call this.
You can give it a Sour Patch rating, sir. I mean, you know a good show when you see it, crowd or no crowd.
It's still kind of new to me because I haven't been watching it at all. This is really my second no people show.
Okay.
Probably give this one a 7. Because it was actually solid.
Okay.
There was some solid stuff going on.
Okay.
Alrighty, so we're going to switch it up a little bit. The show is called Rawcast, and we are still going to talk about Monday Night Raw, but we are going to go back.
Retro Rawcast is part of the show.
Yeah, back in time. So I chose this period because this is what I was mainly watching. And I think 1998, probably like one of their best years as far as like crowds, crowd reactions, merchandise sales, pay-per-view sales.
Pops.
This is like they were kings in 1998.
Storyline.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The end so of I decided. From October of 1997, when Shawn Michaels and Undertaker first started beefing for the title.
In your house
when
he was trying to open the door to that house.
Right. That led to the Hell in the Cell all the way through the next year to the casket match. That, like 4 months right there. That's what started shifting. Because actually that's when I started watching Raw and recording Nitro is during that time right there.
Yeah, see, I always take it back to that In Your House because that was like the first time. That was the first time we really saw Brett be disrespectful when he beat up the Patriot during the singing of the national anthem.
Right,
like, that's one of
the best pay per views actually they've ever had. That In Your House, right?
I think it was Ground Zero.
The one they did in Canada. Those two are like the best, two of the best pay per views they've ever done.
Yeah, and there was that one night. One Night Only was like the month before. The one where like they actually formed DX.
Mm-hmm.
That was the month before, and then they did Ground Zero, and then I forgot which one was next. Oh, Survivor Series was next, and Bad Blood. Bad Blood was right before Survivor Series, so October. So Ground Zero was in September then, because I know they finished the year with the DX pay per view.
Yep.
Well, they beat up Anvil.
Mm-hmm. They put the Road Warriors out, yeah.
Yeah.
Because on this episode, they actually mention, you know, they're out and they'll be coming back soon.
Right. So this is, I'm taking it back to the beginning of 1998. This was like, I'll read here what I wrote here. So 1998 was a year when I discovered who I was as a person. It was a rip-roaring year for me that started off with being a junior in high school who loved pro wrestling, hip-hop, and video games. I was employed at the Burger King. I had a vanity website where I posted wrestling reviews and ridiculous things that only I found amusing. What follows here is a week-by-week review of WF Raw and the pay-per-views, which I saw for free, thanks to a little invention known as the Black Box. Granted, these were shows that have not aged well as far as like language and content, but teenage me loved them. Adult me just finds it kind of cringy, a little bit of the things that they do and say on here. So I hope you stick around as we're going to try to go by these, like, you know, week by week. Don, how did you watch these pay-per-views? Were you black boxing it like I was?
No, man. I had a job, so I was actually paying $50, I think.
I don't think it was 50 yet. For the Union House,
it might have been 50, yeah.
So I think the Big Four. Like
25.
The Big Four, I think, were 50, and I think like the In Your Houses were like 25.
Yeah. So that's what I was doing, but I was doing it for both. I was doing it for WCW and Monday Night and WWE. So yeah, it was always a big deal to watch pay per views at my house.
And did you just get people around?
Yeah.
Did you get like, had folks?
Yeah. I had my crew. They would come over. My mom would, like, you know, make us little snacks and shit. And we'd all sit there, probably like 2, 4, 6, probably about 10 of us, about what you could have now at a gathering and not get in trouble. And yeah, we would watch it at least like twice a month because, you know, WCW would have one and WWF would have one.
Right. But like WCW was having full on pay per views like during the months. Like WWF, theirs were like mini pay per views mm-hmm. in your house. So. That was cool. I mean, a lot of things in WCW were kind of, that's when WCW kind of started going downhill for me because right. it's kind of weird. Like 96, 97, those were their better years, but 98 was just kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, well, all because Starrcade 97 didn't go well.
Oh. All right, so the show begins with, we are in, I forgot where the heck they were.
I think they were in like
Connecticut?
New Haven, Connecticut, I think is where they were, I think.
Okay. So the show begins with Stone Cold Steve Austin on the outside telling the cameraman.
This is Raw is War.
Raw is War.
Yes, it's the good old days.
The show begins with Stone Cold Steve Austin outside telling the cameraman that he is there tonight. Oh, where did you work, by the way? What job did you have at this point?
1998, I was probably just starting to work at GameStop, maybe.
That's amazing because GameStop didn't exist.
Well, it was Babbage's at the time, but...
Babbage's. Okay.
Yeah, but I think I was getting ready to stop working at Babbage's and start working at Sunglass Hut.
Oh, you were one of those. Wow.
Yeah, I was a mall hopper.
No, it was just like, I never knew anyone who actually worked at Sunglass Hut. I just thought people just manifested inside.
Best job to have if you were...
Oh, I can imagine, like, if you're like a... I think I know why.
Well, no, I mean, just all the downtime.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, people came in there, but I mean, really, who's at that point? Who's really trying to buy, like, you know, so
there were
you could tell who's like, going to buy a pair of glasses and who was just coming in and just fucking bullshit. So,
yeah, places like that and like at Zooks and weird clothing places like that. They were like all the rage that like no one ever bought anything from there, but people just showed up. And I think there was like another one that was like kind of like Sunglass Hut, but like kind of like a whole Hawaiian thing going on. Well, there was another clothing store like that, but yeah. Alrighty. So the show begins with Stone Cold Steve Austin outside telling the cameraman he is there tonight to raise hell. And when the other superstars who are in the Royal Rumble with him see the 316 on their pagers, that means he is coming for them. So did you have a pager at this time?
No, I did not have a pager. I did not have a cell phone. I had a house phone, and I worked at the mall, so I was pretty much accessible.
Okay. I had a pager back then. Nobody ever paged me, but I still had one. All right, so we get Farouk versus Ken Shamrock. We see a replay from a Farouk and Ken Shamrock match from September when Farouk caused internal bleeding. Ever since then, Shamrock has been taking out Nation of Domination members. The match begins with Farouk going at Shamrock with his hands. Shamrock makes a comeback and tosses Farouk out of the ring. The Nation of Domination is ringside except for The Rock. He is nowhere to be seen, although he is in attendance. Farouk hits a Samoan drop and Shamrock looks to be holding his gut and seems out. Farouk tosses him out, and Nation of Domination go to mess with him. Shamrock hits the roll-up. Farouk kicks out. The Rock appears on stage. He gets the NOD together for a quick huddle. Ross maintains that Shamrock is a future WWF champion.
Yeah,
that was a laugh.
Yes, it was.
They actually really saw it for him back then.
Oh yeah. He was definitely because he was legit, and the people were behind him.
Farouk shoulder tackles Shamrock repeatedly. Shamrock counters with the Hurricane Rana on the outside. Kama has a chair. The Rock distracts the ref. Farouk tries to whip Shamrock into the turnbuckle and into Kama's chair. Shamrock reverses. Farouk runs into the chair. Shamrock flips him with a belly-to-belly, puts on the ankle lock, and Farouk submits. So after the match, The Rock jumps into the ring and faces off against Shamrock. Stone Cold jumps into the ring, stuns both men, and leaves through the crowd. At the time, I thought it was very unfair that Stone Cold just buries two men who were up and coming. What? I don't know. I was just very, very... No, this is back then. Now I see it for what it is. It's like a funny segment.
What? It was Stone Cold cashing in on what he just told you 5 minutes ago. That he was coming in here to raise hell, and you just sit back and watch. And that's he's just a man of his word.
So I got to tell you, at this point, before he was like... Before like he won the... Before I won the title, I wasn't really that into Stone Cold.
Oh, this was the fucking full train go part of Stone Cold right here, boy.
No, I get it now. But at the time, I was just like, who does this guy think he is? Why does anybody beat him up? I mean, he just gets to like just run around, just run and rush out all over the roster. Like, why does anybody stop him? I don't know. I was a very... Like, you can ask anybody that knew me. I was a very strange teenager. All right, so Jim Cornette appears on this. So did we ever find out what this was about? Was it just so that Vince McMahon can say, like, look, I have the NWA on my show?
I guess, man. I don't... Well, you know, Jim Cornette was weird back then because he was dabbling in Smoky Mountain. He was doing this with the NWA. He was kind of like just... He had an opportunity to put people on TV, and he was just taking it. So I guess that was one of those
things. I mean, back then and even now, I look at this, and I'm just like, this doesn't fit.
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, his whole Jim Cornette's whole on-air part with WWE didn't fit. Even when he did the Louisville lip part, where he would have the 2 minutes to just have that commentary, and he just fucking bash everything, just like the podcast, early version of the podcast.
All right, so Jim Cornette appears in the ring, flanked by NWA President Dennis Corluzzo, who you hear about if you ever listen to his podcast,
and Henry Brody,
and Howard Brody.
Brody, I mean, don't forget him.
Dennis is holding the NWA North American Championship. They will award the title to the winner of the next match. I think weren't they having a tournament before this, like
about
Superstars or something?
Machinations of how we got here.
I want to say that they were leading, that this was like the finish to like a tournament. I don't remember. NWA and WWF during this era seemed completely out of place, even though I could tell there was a huge difference between an NWA match and a WWF match. NWA was slow-paced and technical, while WF was aggressive and had a barroom-style street fight approach to it. Let's see here. The only thing I can think of now was that because Ted Turner now owned what was the former NWA, Vince McMahon thought he would take jabs at his Atlanta counterpart by presenting this brand of the NWA, attempting to prove that he can get this line of product over more on TV than Ted Turner ever could. So that was my logic Now I don't know. I really don't know why this happened.
Maybe we can submit a question and we can find out exactly why it happened.
I'm pretty sure he's been asked this before and I forgot his response.
Yeah, but
I think it's like you said. He just wanted to put people on TV.
Yeah, it's just a working relationship, man.
All right. So Barry Windham versus Jeff Jarrett.
Barry NWA. Windham versus Jeff Jarrett in 1998.
No mention of him being a blackjack.
A blackjack, by the way. He's all with all the blackjack gimmick in full regalia. He's definitely not Barry Windham here.
All right, so I have a Cornetism off the top. If I tell you a rooster can pull a boxcar, brother, hook it up.
See, less offensive.
It's offensive to boxcars or roosters. Which one? All right, so Jarrett begins the match with an arm drag. Jarrett, I'm not going to go through all this because I really, really went deep. Basically, Windham hits a lariat, goes for a pin. Jarrett gets the foot on the rope at the last minute. Cornette claims the referee, Tim White, doesn't know what he's doing. Dennis Corluzzo distracts the referee while Cornette climbs into the ring and hits Windham, who has Jarrett on the turnbuckle for a superplex with his loaded tennis racket. Jarrett turns over, drapes his arm on Windham, and we have a winner. And, of course... Steve Austin climbs to the ring, stuns Jarrett, does the Fargo strut, grabs a chair and leaves.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
Ken Shamrock interview. Shamrock calls out Stone Cold for the Rumble. Sunny comes out. She will be the guest ring announcer for the next match.
Okay, come on. Tell me about it. Sunny, 1998. What'd you think?
Oh, I was all about the Sunny, but remember Sable was also around at this time.
That's about to say.
I was gravitating more towards her at this point.
Oh yeah.
97 though, I was all about Sunny.
Yes, sir. Man. Kids, don't do drugs.
All right, Sniper and Recon versus Skull and E-Ball.
With our man.
Oh yeah.
The Jackal.
What? He was a Jackal, but what did
Don's Callis. Don Cyrus.
Did you ever hear the story that like JBL got like the Hardys? JBL got the Hardys to like mess with his truck or something?
Oh no.
Oh, put break toothpicks off in his keyholes.
Oh shit. Now I always so JBL, heard that they wanted him to actually do what Seth Rollins is doing now. Play like a Jesus character, yeah.
Oh. No, there was a time where JBL comes up to the Hardys who are brand new. He's like, yeah, you know, the Undertaker, he doesn't really care for this Jackal guy. So, you know, it'd be a real shame if someone took these toothpicks right here, stuck them in his keyholes and broke them off. That'd be a real shame if that happened to him. And, of course, being the new young guys, they had to comply.
So that's the reason why Vince Russo said he wanted to see JBL get his ass knocked out and create.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember because I think I have heard this from Vince Russo. I think he did tell this story.
That's what he said on the.
No, I'm talking about this story. The story about I think I heard this story from Vince Russo a long time ago. he called him a bully. He said he was just like the biggest obnoxious bully. All right, so the match happens. The Jackal gets in the ring. So apparently DOA beat down Sniper and Recon, get the pin. Kurgan gets in the ring. All three men beat down DOA. Kurgan gets the claw on one of the guys. Jackal gets in the ring. He's the only one who can control Kurgan and who can get him to let go of his hold. Jackal talks to Kurgan, slaps him, and only then does Kurgan release the hold. This is a weird... faction because they just split up out of nowhere for no reason, because I don't think they lasted too much longer after this.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot of steam behind it. They were one of the factions who just nobody got behind, but this was the point where everybody was in a faction. Nation of Domination, Los Bellicos, right. Was DOA, DX, so you know everybody was kind of linking up. So you only had a few people who were kind of on the outside, and that was like Undertaker and Stone Cold. And that's why Stone Cold could stand out, because he wasn't involved in all the other mix everybody was in. So he could fucking be himself and just be on his own and just raise hell throughout the whole thing. And that's what they did. That's what they really did in this show.
Right. So DX is in the ring. They make a remark about China's implants, which wouldn't fly in 2020. Oh, it's like the sun. Once you see it, it's like the sun. Once you see it, you can't stop looking.
Sean Hunter.
You see here, Triple H talks about Owen Hart, calls him out, tries to bait him to come down and face him.
Calling him the Nugget?
No, that was a little bit later.
Okay.
Owen appears on the Titantron. He says Triple H is getting personal, but Owen has some compassion, and he wants Triple H to heal 100% so he can break his other leg. Triple H tells Owen Hart to watch his back because DX is bigger than all of them. So next we have Owen Hart versus Savio Vega. Owen starts out hot, fuming from his interaction earlier. DX appears on the stage, distracting Owen. Savio gets the upper hand. Owen uses his quick feet and flying maneuvers. At one point, Savio distracts the ref while the other body quest takes shots at Owen. Referee Jack Doan comes out and ejects the other body quest. Owen puts Savio in a sharpshooter. Jesus jumps on the apron. Owen drop kicks him and then gets the pin on Savio with a roll up. Before he can run out and attack DX, Owen is jumped and beaten up by those body quests. They bring Owen's limp body to DX and hold him while Triple H slaps Owen and beats on him. Sean hands Los Boricuas some cash and they disappear.
Yeah, gotta have the hired help, man.
Right. So Paul Bearer comes down. He looks disheveled, like he has slept in days.
He looks more like Percy Pringle than Paul Bearer.
Percival Pringle III.
His hair wasn't even black.
Yeah, this is, I think this is when he started looking like not like Paul Bear, when he just started coming out normally. No. He had already looked like this already. He looked like around 97, he started looking like this, coming out this way. Let's see here. He gets into the ring and calls out Undertaker, saying he hopes Shawn Michaels destroys him at the Royal Rumble. He curses the ground Taker walks on and despises the very air he breathes. He blames Undertaker for him losing Kane. He claims Undertaker has poisoned Kane's mind and now he can't find him. He has searched everywhere. He turns his attention to Kane, who he knows is watching on television. He begs him to come home. This was great. Paul Bearers are awesome.
I've actually did his career on Something to Wrestle With this week. So if you have a couple of hours while you're sitting at home, check that out.
All right. So back in the locker room, Stone Cold is leaving. Tells the cameraman to look what he did to the world's strongest man. You see Mark Henry laid out underneath the table.
Mark Henry, boy. Young Mark Henry. He looked like he was probably about less than 300 pounds right there. Probably about 280. Babyface laid out with the headbangers trying to help him up.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, did you see the headbangers were just looking like, what the heck happened? Like, you got knocked the F out. All right, so Mark Merrill with Sable versus Tom Brady, and I have to keep reminding myself not to call him Tom Brady.
Was Tom Brady in OVW, or where did he come from?
Tom Brady was Salvador Sincere. Yeah, he was in the
movie. Yeah.
I don't know about now, but I know at one point, just a few years ago, he actually purchased the Patriot gimmick from the Patriot, and now he's the Patriot.
Oh, God. Okay. Dale Wilkes back on that shit again?
You leave that man alone. All right, so Tom Brady is going to wrestle Merrill. Tom Brady was one of those guys. Remember how, I don't know if you read Jericho's book, but his first book, but he mentioned at one time WWF was like hiring like just normal just dudes just to be jobbers. And they were going to get him to be the Goon. You remember the Goon?
Yep.
That was going to be Chris Jericho. And they weren't really going to get pushes. They were just basically going to be job guys. Tom Brady is one of those guys.
Oh, okay. So he's basically going to be what Wild Bill Irwin became.
Yeah. All right. So Brandy gets in the ring. Merrill hops out. He lets Brandy chase him. Oh, no. The match is happening because Tom Brady says he wants to defend Sable from this abuser. He wants to be her knight in shining armor. And I can just picture the internet now calling him like a simp. You know? Or like a white knight, you know?
What would they call Mark Merrill?
I don't know. Who knows? Brandy gets in the ring and Merrill hops out. He lets Brandy chase him. He uses Sable as a shield, allowing him to get the upper hand. The crowd chants for Sable, and Merrill can't take it. Brandy gets the upper hand off the distraction, gets a minor pop, but the crowd is still there to see Sable. Tom Brandy at one point knocks Merrill outside of the ring, and he lands on Sable. Merrill admonishes Sable for standing there. Brandy attacks Merrill, helps Sable up. Merrill takes this opportunity to double axe handle Brandy from the apron to continue to fight while Sable sits on the floor tending to her ankle. Merrill hits the TKO on Brandy and then goes to give him another one. Austin gets into the ring while Merrill has Brandy on his shoulders. He stuns him and then shadow boxes as his music plays and he leaves the ring. Smiling at Sable and she smiles back.
You ready for the Kingism?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh my God, JR, it does look like Sable really is hurt. I might have to go over there and give her mouth to mouth. JR, it appears that it's her ankle that's hurt, King.
All right, so now we come to a very, very weird part. I don't know. Flash Funk versus the artist formerly known as Goldust.
Oh, man.
So Flash Funk comes out without the Funkettes, by the way. I think they had already gotten rid of all that. Now, Goldust comes out with kind of like a knockoff Shaft theme music, holding a boombox, sunglasses, gold chains, fur coat, and in full-on blackface.
Like super black face. Like,
yeah, Jerry Lawler calls him his homeboy.
Oh, man.
King also said that he made OG, which stands for over gold. Flash Funk attacks him with some drop kicks, and Has anyone brought this to his attention lately? Like, has he talked about this? I'm pretty sure he has.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because this is like a, if not, this is like a huge omission right here.
Right. I'd even forgot about it. When I was like, huh?
I remember this happening, but I just don't remember, like, it just completely just vanished from my mind. So Flash Funk attacks him with some drop kicks and a hip toss. Goldust leaves the ring and trips on the mat. He gets back in the ring, gets a hold of Funk. The two go back and forth with Flash whipping him into the corner and climbing on top as Luna knocks him off right in front of the referee, causing a disqualification. Goldust gives him a curtain call. Vader then jumps into the ring, attacks Goldust, who runs away with Luna. Vader and Flash hug in the ring and pose. And all I can think of is, that's not 6 feet.
My man Vader. What time is it? Vader time.
So someone brought up an interesting point. As to avoid any lawsuit with Lucasfilm, they were only referring to him officially as the man they call Vader, not actual Vader.
And not Big Van Vader?
Yeah, like I guess WCW, I guess, had a relationship or something with Lucasfilm and they could do that. But if you notice in his WWE tenure, he was always the man they call Vader.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting little work around there.
That was a way to get around, because he's not actually Vader, but he's the man they call Vader. I don't know. So, New Age Outlaws versus the Headbangers. King and JR talk about the Outlaws' upcoming match against Legion of Doom. The match starts out fairly standard. Headbangers do a few double team moves on the Outlaws. The Godwin brothers appear on the stage. Billy Gunn uses the distraction to his advantage. The guy wins leave. Headbangers pull up a flapjack on Billy, attempt a stage dive, which Billy counters, flips into a pinning situation, and the Outlaws get the victory. After the match, Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie come down. Charlie waves his chainsaw around in the ring as the Outlaws exit stage left. A lot of people were giving like the Outlaws flack for a lot of years, but if you actually watch their matches, they could work.
Yeah, man, Billy Gunn was a young Billy Gunn before he started getting injured. Yeah, man, Billy Gunn could go. He was already like a 3-time champion before he got with Road Dogg.
Right.
Then Road Dogg could go. I mean, he's fucking Armstrong.
He's an Armstrong.
They all can wrestle.
It's just like you kind of forget that. Like when you think about it, you're like, right. Oh God, it's these two. Yeah. But then you're like, man, these guys were doing some work. All right, so Don King is in his office talking about Mike Tyson at WrestleMania. They haven't sealed the deal yet. They have to dot a few I's and cross a few T's, but he says, it's a pleasure you cannot afford to miss. Footage is shown from the first ever Hell in a Cell match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker.
Still Shawn Michaels comes down. Hell in a Cell there ever
had. Yeah, definitely. Shawn Michaels comes down by himself. He says he's there to call out The Undertaker. He says to come out and face him like a man. Taker's music plays. A few druids come out with a casket from last week that he graffitied up. The druids leave it at ringside. Michaels is not impressed. He thinks it's a prank by Triple H and Chyna. He asks him to come out. Triple H and Chyna appear on the stage and try to get Shawn's attention. He asks, well, if you're up there, then who's in the casket? The Undertaker opens the casket and pulls Shawn in as we fade to black. We actually get like an in-casket shot from a point.
Yeah, it's just black inside the casket.
This was a really good episode of Raw.
That shit was awesome. Shit was really good. Even minus Dustin Rhodes and blackface, when you watch it back 22 years later, like, oh, I know how they got away with it. It was 1998, but oh, that doesn't look good now.
So when all this was going on, what was your take as far as like worldview and stuff? I mean, I was like, of course, I was the rebellious teenager at this time, so this kind of stuff was actually right up my alley.
I don't know. I was always a good kid, so I mean, I was into the same shit you were, wrestling, hip hop, video games, but you know, I don't know. Yeah, this is my shit. This is my shit. We talked about this every Tuesday morning in AP computer programming for the whole period. It was like, okay, what'd you watch? What'd you watch? What'd you see? What'd you like? What you didn't like? Okay, this happened. Oh, you must have had the channel turn when this happened. So, you know, that's kind of what we did.
So the way we used to get away, we used to have a workaround. Me and my friend, I had a friend who lived down the street. I would tape Nitro and he would take Raw, and at the end of the night we just switch.
Well, we had multiple VCRs, so in one room we would do Raw, and then one room we would do Nitro, and then whichever one, or we would just watch one and record one, and then whichever one we recorded, we just watch it later that night or watch it the next day.
Right. But yeah, like, this was like rebellious TV for me. This was like my thing that I was into, and you couldn't tell me otherwise.
This episode has a lot of forbidding in it, because that casket match basically ends Shawn Michaels' career as we knew it from 1990.
Oh, because he hit his back on the, yeah, on the edge, right? His
back on the lip when he got backdrop. Yeah. And that's what fucked his back up, so he couldn't have that awesome match with Stone Cold. He was fucking hurting when he did WrestleMania against Stone Cold. And then he retired and sat out for 9 years.
Yeah, it was just kind of like... But yeah, I was super into all this when I was at this time. Because you couldn't tell me nothing about nothing back then.
Yeah, this was a really good time in WWE. This was when it was really starting, when they were really making their move to take over the 83-week stranglehold WCW had on the ratings.
Right. So I guess that's going to be it for this week, unless you have anything else you'd like to add.
Oh, just shout-outs and thank yous to everybody who listens to the WrestleCast, who now listens to the RawCast. Thank you, Sam, for being the host of this particular program and being on with me this evening, and hopefully we can continue to do this week in and week out, and everybody can stay a little bit more current, up to date, and not have to wait till Thursdays, Fridays, or Saturdays to hear our voices. So check out me and Simi on Thursday, as we'll be talking about NXT, and also check out the Dark Match on the Patreon page for our AEW review.
All right, so any shout outs this week?
Nope, just I have a parting promo ready for the end of this. I already got it. Ready to go.
All right. So for all my rowdy friends on Monday night, for Lady Nikki on Twitter, all my people on Twitter, for Don, and shout out to Classic, of course. We will see you next week. The next week episode of Raw, Classic Raw, will be
January 12th.
12?
Yep.
Yeah, and then after that is the Royal Rumble, so if you'd like to watch that, we can... We're not going to cover the whole Rumble, just like bits and pieces. But, yeah, so we will catch you all next week. Peace.
Now, it's only been a couple of weeks since I stood here last. WrestleMania. Where are you? Are you? I only had a short time to beat the human bone breaker Shayna Baszler, and shocked as she was, beat her. I did. So, Shayna, let me clear up some of the confusion as to what happened for you. Now, I told you that this was going to be a test of heart versus skill, but actually, this was a battle of the mind. Now, a lot has been said about me lately. A lot has been said about the man lately. Maybe I'm arrogant. Or maybe I let you think of that. Maybe this historic title run has gotten to my head. Or maybe I used it to get to yours. Because the quicker you destroy everyone on your road to WrestleMania, the sillier I became. Now, why do you think that is, Shayna? Because the only person that can get close enough to the Queen to destroy her is the Joker, who she sees as posing no threat. And that's why I'm the champ. Because somebody who was born to bully everyone will never beat somebody who was born to survive everything. And that brings me to the Money in the Bank ladder match. Now, I'm here to challenge whoever wants this the most to climb that ladder, unhook that briefcase, and use that contract to think a name, a time, and a place. And there you will find the man, the champ, waiting for you. Now, I always have a plan. But I promise you, whoever wins and thinks they can beat me, I will shock the world one more time.